I'm excited to be here today to talk about deploying SRE training best practices to production, what we learned, or strapping jetpacks on unicorns, the postmortem. You may have noticed at this conference, SREs really love unicorns, at least Google SREs do. We put them on slides, we put them on t-shirts. I've seen a few of our t-shirts in the wild as well. And we even bring inflatable unicorns with us. Hat tip to my colleague Sparky for bringing that along and keeping things fun. So what am I going to cover today? So first of all, who am I? Nadi covered this a little bit, but I'll go into a slight amount more detail just to give you some understanding of why I'm up here giving this talk. I'll give a timeline. Any good retrospective or postmortem has a timeline of events, so we'll talk about a timeline of training SREs at Google over the last few years. I'll give a reminder about why learning actually matters and, you know, why do we even care about training SREs in the first place. We'll talk about what we learned specifically over the last few years in training SREs at Google on the SRE EDU team that I lead. And we'll go on to talk a little bit about how we've been able to scale our SRE training to make it more globally consistent, to make it more reliable, or essentially SREing our SRE training. And then finally, I'll talk about a bit of a case study. So how did we actually apply key SRE principles to actually improve the training program and drive those improvements? Awesome. All right, so hello. My name is Jennifer Petoff. Some of my friends call me Dr. J. I work in the Google Dublin office in Ireland. Thought I'd start in a little bit of an unorthodox way. The reason people call me Dr. J is because I have a PhD in chemistry. So back in the day, you know, wearing lab coats, goggles, things start on fire when you expose them to air. You know, clearly, I don't do that anymore. Happy to chat with people afterwards about how that all happened. Another fun fact, I also am a part-time travel blogger at Sidewalk Safari, and something's happening over here. an easily distracted part-time travel blogger, and in fact, I'm going to be getting on a plane right after this to actually head out on vacation, so cycles after this will be a bit limited. On to the more important things, I've been at Google for 11 years, and I'm a project manager, please don't hold that against me. And I actually have a range of experience in the training and education space. So I worked on university programs. I've worked on the DoubleClick publisher training team, so teaching Google's clients how to use our ad serving products. I've run global customer services projects for AdWords and now SRE. And as Nati mentioned, I am a senior program manager for SRE. I've been doing this for the past 4 years. In fact, this is the longest time I've been on any one team at Google. So I heart SRE. And co-lead for the SRE education program, which is why I'm standing up here. And my other claim to fame, I guess, is I'm one of the co-editors of the original SRE book. All right, so how did we get here? So this is me and my colleague Andrew Widdowson. We co-lead the SRE education program for Google, Google SRE. Back in 2015, Andrew gave a talk at SREcon in North America titled "From Zero to Hero: Recommended Practices for Training Your Ever-Evolving SRE Teams," or "How Can I Strap a Jetpack to My Newbies While Keeping Everyone Up to Speed?" And it's actually been a few years now since Andrew gave this talk, and we've actually come a long way within Google in terms of how we actually educate our new SREs and provide continuing education opportunities for our SREs as well. So in true SRE spirit, we really thought it was important to take a look back, to do a postmortem, to do a retrospective, and discuss what we've learned actually since Andrew gave his talk 3 years ago. All right, as I mentioned before, every good retrospective has a timeline, so let's jump into that. As many of you know, site reliability engineering at Google was born back in 2003. Ben Trainor-Sloss, the founder of SRE at Google, he says, you know, fundamentally, SRE is what happens when you ask a software engineer to design an operations function. After that, there was the decade of what we'll call grokking SRE the hard way. So in turn, for that period of time after SRE got its start at Google, there was really no reliability in the way new SREs were trained or ramped up on a team. Various efforts had sprouted up in different pockets of the organization, different sites, different teams, You know, for example, Dublin has a lot of storage type teams. So of course there was a course on the various storage options that are available, and you know, something completely different being taught to folks in California or in Sydney. And so no consistency, and you know, many people were really left to learn on their own. So sink or swim, which is not necessarily setting people up for success. In 2014, a small group of SREs at Google who dubbed themselves the Secret Alliance, they formed a small group, a small working group to say, like, we think we can do this better. So let's talk about what we can do to improve SRE education at Google. And after months of meeting and sort of chewing on things and trying to figure out what could be done, they put the Secret Alliance put together a proposal for a small dedicated training team that would look after you know, the training needs of SREs at Google. And the SRE education team was formed in January of 2015. And that's when I joined and came up with this mission statement. So our goal is the consistent and reliable education for all Google SREs. Exclamation point, not optional. And 3 months later, our SRE EDU nuclear production orientation was launched. So this is focused on technical training on Google's production systems as well as SRE cultural principles. So, you know, blameless postmortems, let's automate away all the toil, things of that sort. So things that people need to know to work effectively as SREs. Again, nuclear production orientation, we run classes monthly in three regional hubs around the world. And all of our new SREs attend our nuclear production orientation in their second week on the job. So it wasn't long after that Andrew actually gave his talk at SREcon. And you know, talking about his own personal experience, and at that time, so it was based on a lot of his personal experience, and not yet about what we learned in terms of running and scaling education and training programs. Several months later, SRE EDU's going on call curriculum launch. So this was about how do we actually get SREs, the new folks on the team, up to speed, confident, ready to take the pager when the time comes. SRE book came out a couple months later, so that actually featured a chapter on training SREs that Andrew actually wrote. A year later, so there needs to be something for everyone. You can't learn everything in the first 2 weeks on the job. So a year later, we actually launched our advanced and elective education program. So this was called SRE EDU Week, and it's by SREs for SREs to try and unlock those silos of information that exists in different parts of the organization, and just get it out there, share it across to different folks. In August 2017, so this is about 2 years after we launched our SRE EDU program, we created a new hands-on orientation program, and I'll talk a little bit about how we got to that point and why we completely redid our nuclear production orientation. There's a bit of a case study further in the talk on how we got there. And here I am a year later talking about strapping jetpacks to unicorns at this SRE Economia talk. So we now have 3 years of experience running a full-blown training program. It's designed for SREs. It's run by SREs. And for the rest of this talk, we're really going to focus on what we learned between, you know, the time of Andrew's talk back in 2015 and now. But first, why does learning actually matter? So if you think about it, for new SREs, it's all about building trust, it's about building confidence, it's about earning ownership of those services that folks will be supporting. It's about increasing that speed and trajectory to get people up to speed very quickly. And for the most part, there's not really a class you can take outside of, I don't know, at university or school or whatever, SREs really learned on the job. I mean, maybe that'll change someday, but there's, you know, really a need to get folks up to speed once they join a company. And for experienced SREs, it's about keeping those skills sharp. It's about breadth of knowledge, keep up to date as systems change. It's also about staying invested. And we rely heavily on our experienced SREs to actually teach folks coming in or to share that knowledge that they have. Because oftentimes, you really don't become an expert on something until you can explain it to someone else. So experienced SREs, it's about sharing that expertise. All right, so what did we learn? In Andrew's 2015 talk, he actually presented several tips. So I want to review those and talk through those, and then we'll talk a little bit about you know, fundamentally, like, what are some ways that you can actually implement those and put them into practice? And I'll differentiate that versus, you know, some things you might want to think about if you want to do these things at scale. So if you're working for a larger organization or if you want, you know, to have a smoother, more operationalized program, here's some things to consider. So the first tip was simply, you know, you want to build concrete sequential learning experiences. And at a fundamental level, it's all about the ASPATs. Now, you might be wondering, what the heck is an ASPAT? Like, we're not beating anyone. An ASPAT is simply an acronym that stands for a student should be able to. So it's a way to really set out and make clear what the learning objectives are before you actually sit down and do a brain dump, write content. So think fundamentally thinking about what you want to convey to people and what they should be able to do with that information once they have it is really important. Also, creating a directed graph. So what are the dependencies? If you want to teach somebody, you know, so if you want to teach something, someone something about $bar, like what are the $foo prerequisites for that? And just mapping that out in advance to give people clear steps on how to learn about a topic. Clear ownership is also key, so especially as you're looking at your training materials, you want to make sure they have a clear owner so that folks can take feedback, make updates, and that information doesn't get out of date in a rapidly evolving world. At scale, you want to take this ownership piece one step further. We actively manage materials freshness. So at Google, we actually do have a problem. There's a lot of outdated material out there. And so on the SRE EDU team, we're actually, at least I personally feel like I'm almost obsessed with making sure we keep things fresh and make sure that there's no issues. It's super frustrating for a new person on the team to watch a video or go through a code lab only to have their mentor tell them later, oh, wait, that thing was deprecated 3 years ago. Like, that was a waste of your time. So we want to avoid that frustration. We want to give potential students a way to know that the material is fresh, they can trust it. And it's also important to put a low friction process in place to really take feedback about the materials and again, continue to evolve and update. And make that content owner responsible for evaluating any feedback that comes in and make those updates. All right, so from Andrew's 2015 talk, another tip was simply to create excellent reverse engineers. And fundamentally, this is about mentorship. So you can do this by setting an example for folks. It's about setting up a good starter project for people, so making sure it's scope and time limited in an appropriate way. And then even just setting aside a queue of interesting bugs from your team that people can dip into and kind of just, you know, get in there and start exploring the systems they'll be working on. And at scale, what you really want to do is actually start early. If you can give your new SREs hands-on experience with production almost as soon as they walk in the door, we found that this actually works really well. The SRE EDU team actually now runs an educational service. It's a simple photos upload service. It's deployed to production, and our students can actually safely play around with things. They can break things, attempt to fix things without fear. And our Noogler production orientation, in that program, we've developed controlled breakage scenarios that can then illustrate some key parts of our production services and help new SREs build troubleshooting skills and that confidence very early on. Another tip from back in the day, so it's to celebrate your postmortems with your newbies. So as you know, fundamentally, blamelessness, postmortems are a key element of SRE culture. So it's a good idea, like, make sure that your postmortems are readily available, people know where to find them, they're broadly distributed. If you have a production meeting, you know, many teams at Google do, and I'm sure other places as well, actually review those postmortems in the meeting to make sure that everybody is benefiting from those lessons. And then modeling blamelessness. So blamelessness is at the core of what we do in SRE, and it's at the core of the culture. So model that when things go wrong, and you know, it helps get your newbies up to speed that way. At scale, you know, have your leadership potentially communicate stories behind selective outages, the most juicy and interesting ones. We add a show and tell component to our orientation. So we ask students to actually check in with their home team, find an interesting postmortem, bring it along with them to class and discuss it with the group to just get that knowledge out there more broadly. And we also encourage ops reviews. So a number of our different SRE offices have an ops review. So it's just, hey, let's get a bunch of people into a room. There might be donuts, there might be whiskey, you know, and we talk about the good, the bad, and the neutral things that happen in a particular week. So it's a great way to ensure shared state and to break down silos. Group disaster role-playing early and often was another tip that Andrew brought up in 2015. And we actually heard a bit about this yesterday in Kieran's talk with the live impromptu Wheel of Misfortune exercise, which was pretty cool. See Hazel in the back. But fundamentally, so this is, you know, it's about teeing up a specific scenario. You know, if you draw that Dungeons and Dragons analogy, so a volunteer led by a dungeon master walks through a scenario and learns something in the process. I think it's important to call out here that the person that's sort of in that hot seat, they're a volunteer and not a victim. It's not meant to be stump the new person. It's meant to help people build confidence in their ability to tackle problems that they might see in real life on the job. All right, and then, just talking through scenarios with a mentor is also super useful. At scale, Google's dirt tests, I would say, fall into this category. Our company-wide disaster recovery testing exercises. And then I did mention our training service, as I was saying before. So it's something that students can play with. They can break in a classroom setting and without, you know, fear, essentially. So that was role-playing. So this is about breaking real things and fixing real things. So fundamentally, like, the easiest way to do this is to have new folks actually shadow on callers and then reverse shadow as they get more experienced. And at scale, both dirt tests and our training service come into play again. Just a reminder, this training service that we run at Google, it is deployed to production, but it doesn't have real users. So there's that, you know, eliminates a little bit of that stress that people might feel as they're ramping up. Two more tips before we move on to some other interesting things that we've learned. So another thing that Andrew mentioned back in 2015 was to ride shotgun as much as possible. And for those that are not from the US and have no idea what I'm talking about or what he was talking about, this means sitting in the seat next to the driver, like you're riding shotgun when you're in a car with someone. And so just being close to a situation, seeing what's going on side by side with someone. So fundamentally, it's about mentors, it's about shadowing. And then at scale, we do a couple of things. On the SRE EDU team, we have a couple team members who shadow on call for a variety of different services to see how they do it. And is there anything that we can learn and share across the board? And then we actually have a couple kinds of rotation programs at Google as well. They range in duration from a week to 6 months. I think many of you have heard of our mission control program. So that's also really relevant here in terms of seeing how other teams drive, if you will. All right, and again, this last tip is that, you know, the best education is continuous education. So learning doesn't stop after the first couple weeks on the job. And some ways to ensure that this continues is, you know, fundamentally just having a tech talk repo, like having time, you know, hosting regular tech talks and, host regular tech talks, record them, make them available. And then investing in documentation, we heard a lot about that yesterday as well, or the day before, from other speakers at the conference. So investing in that and making sure the documentation is up to date is also important. At scale, one of the things that we do is we actually drip feed emails to new SREs. So we have a series of 12 emails that we send out on a monthly basis and focusing on various topics and making sure that SREs have access to a variety of resources that they might need. I talked slightly about this in the timeline, but just to reiterate, having a specific org-wide learning week is super helpful. So we run our SRE EDU week once a year, and as a program manager, for me, it's a forcing function to get people to do something that's important but not urgent. So, you know, subject matter experts are busy, and if you give them a deadline, this can actually help get the stuff out of their head and, you know, craft those learning objectives and create new content. All right. So just moving on now. I want to move into new territory. So over the past 3 years, we've gone from something that's been very much individually curated and administered to something that's globally consistent and scaled, a scaled program. And as we've scaled our approach, we've actually learned that it's important to apply key SRE principles to training your SREs, or how to SRE your SRE training effectively. So here's a few tips that we have about how to actually do that, how to SRE your SRE training. So I think one really important thing is to recognize right off the bat that knowledge about distributed systems is, not surprisingly, distributed. So it's not really realistic to have your entire organization of subject matter experts working full-time on the training team. You know, there's plenty of other work that needs to be done, like very important work. So we've found that it's been effective to focus on a very small core team, so an enabling team, and then to really scale through volunteers that work with us on a part-time basis. So the Google SRE EDU team, we are a mix of educationally minded SREs, program managers, and an instructional designer. And we have dedicated volunteers. We actually call them our site deans. Jean in the front row is actually one of our site deans, who work in each of our orientation hubs to basically manage the experience for those new people. And we also have dozens of volunteer instructors that share their subject matter expertise on a regular basis. So SLOs are critical to, critical principle of SRE, and I think they definitely apply in the case of a training program as well. So we think it's important you want to define SLOs for the team and actually communicate them. Thinking about what's important from a training perspective, it's maybe a little bit different than running a service, but for us, it's things like coverage. So what percent of the target audience is actually taking the training that you intended them to take? And response time. So we want to make sure our students have a good experience. We want to make sure our volunteers have a good experience. And we want to acknowledge any feedback that we get. You know, people are giving us the gift of time when they volunteer, so we want to give them the respect associated with a timely response when they have feedback to give us. So say, hey, replies to email expected within 2 business days, for example. Another tidbit on how to SRE your SRE training, really focusing in on the operations of it. So the more you scale, the more important operational considerations become. So for us, we actually found that adding classes to our learning management system was a pain and toil-filled process, so definitely not fun. And so we actually aim to automate away that toil. We run quarterly hackathons with volunteers who then help us free up additional cycles to do more value-added work. So you can see the key principle in play there. It's also important to think about your training cadence. So are you going to offer classes on a weekly basis, monthly basis? Where is it going to be? How are you going to get people from point A to point B? So the larger you are, the more important this is to consider. If you're flying people between countries, what are the visa considerations? What other programs are you interfacing with? So it can be quite a complex system. We talked a little bit about this before, but the idea of a canonical set of materials is very important. So define that canonical set of materials and provide a feedback mechanism that's not simply allowing people to just go at it and direct edit without any kind of review process. So on the SRE EDU team, we actually lock down our decks and lesson plans, so we don't allow them to be copied and forked essentially or edited directly. I found in my experience working on a number of projects in SRE, SREs often have strong opinions, and if you let them copy the materials, you'll often end up with dozens of different copies of your deck, all of them slightly different from one another, and none of them completely up to date. So this is a step that we take to make sure that our students can trust that the material is accurate. And making sure they can trust that. And then I think avoiding single points of failure. So that's also important. Make sure that more than one person knows how to do all the mission critical things. Increase your bus factor to be greater than one for any critical tasks. So if someone goes on vacation, hopefully no one's going to get hit by a bus, but you do want to make sure that people can enjoy their lives. All right. So as we all know, SRE, it's about culture. It's not necessarily about one particular tool set. So it's important to try and imprint that culture early. So if you're working with new SREs and delivering a training program, really focusing in on those cultural aspects. So with our SRE EDU orientation program, we actually have a few different classes that we offer. So we have one specifically about this is the role of the SRE and how it works at Google. We also have a class called Launches, Rollbacks, and Postmortems, which focuses on some of these other key principles. All of our going on call classes also have an element of SRE culture included. So it's pretty, it's nice to kind of work that in. You also want to make sure that your volunteers are modeling the behavior that you want people learn by observing in addition to sitting through a lecture. So make sure that your volunteers actually model that behavior that you want your new SREs to exhibit. And TLDR, don't just teach the tech, teach the culture. All right. Don't be a hero. So we've heard this in various talks, I think, throughout the conference, but in SRE, heroism tends to mask bigger problems until they get so big that it just, the wheels completely fall off the bus. So in fact, don't be a hero is something that we reinforce in our classes as well. When you're running a training program, there can actually be a temptation to be a hero for your program. So you can guard against this in a number of ways. And one thing that we do is we make sure that we're very clear on the scope of things that we take on. So there's a bunch of different training teams at Google, and we've carved out a very specific scope for ourselves, specific to technical training of SREs and SRE cultural principles. And there are other teams that kind of deal with soft skills training and general engineering principles. So be very clear on that scope and what you actually have resources to do. And we try and take the emotion out of things. So we actually have decision trees. So, if there's any, here's the content that we think should be in our production orientation. If we're going to make any changes to this, here's the decision tree for whether something will end up in or out. Because I've actually found as your program grows, more people are interested in getting their sort of pet thing into the program. So just having objective criteria and not just being, we are the ones that say no can be quite helpful. And then if somebody's asking you to do something that will clearly add toil on the team, push back on it or just basically try and understand, are we going to get more resources to actually do this thing? So don't be the hero. Don't keep on taking on stuff just because people ask. All right. So also at this conference and especially in the last talk, we heard a lot about observability. We talked about monitoring. So even in SRE training programs, you can ensure observability, make sure you're monitoring things. These concepts are critical to running an SRE training program. You really can improve what you can't measure. So one thing that we've done is we launched our program, and then we iterate on it based on what we're seeing from the sort of signals that we've put in place so we can monitor things and look for areas of improvement. Also, we use on-call to help people stay sharp, to help the team stay sharp. The engineers on the SRE EDU team, they are actually still on call for various Google production services to keep those skills sharp and make sure that we're teaching people the things that they actually need to know to do their job. Gives them credibility as well in terms of creating the training materials. All right, going to end quickly, I think I have about 5 minutes left, with a quick case study. Basically talking about how we launched, we looked at the data we had, and then we drove improvements based on our monitoring. All right. So in the training space, you can essentially look at survey data as a form of monitoring. Very, very simple. And we actually start with very simple metrics, and there's more complicated things you can measure, and we'll talk about that. But simple things like how many people would recommend the training that you're giving to others? If they self-report their confidence, how confident did they feel before they took your training versus after the training? you can parse open-ended comments. So survey data is sort of the simplest way to take a pulse on how people are feeling about your program and if they're benefiting from it. And as I said, you can get more sophisticated. You can do things like measuring time to on-call, time to file your first bug, time to file to submit meaningful code to the code base. But you do need to weigh the toil to measure the thing versus the benefit of actually measuring that thing. So now let's discuss this case study to show how we used our survey data to actually drive specific improvements. Okay, so these are some stats about the first version of our SRE EDU production orientation program. We had a 90% net promoter score. So these are people that said they were likely or very likely to recommend SRE EDU nuclear production orientation to others, divided by the total number of survey responses. And this did not include people that said they were, say, somewhat likely to recommend. So we took a pretty hard line on that. Then we also looked at confidence. So it was, we saw that 73% of respondents reported a one or more point increase in confidence. And we actually asked people to self-rate their confidence on a 7-point scale from extremely not confident to extremely confident. So if you take that diff, there's a maximum possible range between -6 and 6. So you see +6 if someone went for I'm so not confident to now I'm super extremely confident. So that's good. Versus, you know, if someone was like, I'm super awesome and super, super confident before training, and now, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing, like if something horrible happens. So you can see that here. So 73% of folks did see some increase in confidence. So overall, you know, pretty good, but we actually thought we could do better. And, you know, based on aggregate survey data, like we took a look at some of the open-ended comments. It's kind of like consulting logs, looking for a smoking gun if there's a situation going on. And we could really see a key theme emerging: make it more hands-on. You know, people felt like we were lecturing at them, content was, you know, pouring out their ears. So make it more hands-on. So what did we do? We completely redesigned our orientation program to make it more hands-on. We actually slimmed down the lectures to be just enough information to allow folks to tackle very, very hands-on scenarios. We built this training service that I talked about earlier, the simple photo upload service, and we could break it in certain ways, set people up in groups of three to then tackle those outages and learn something in a safe environment. And yeah, okay. So how did people react to this? So we took what did the next generation of SREs actually think of this? So we're happy to say that we saw improvements to both net promoter score and self-reported student confidence. So +7 percentage points up to 97% on the net promoter score. And also super excited to see +26 percentage points increase in very likely to recommend. We also saw a shift in student confidence. 87% now said, I'm feeling more confident. And just a general positive shift in the histogram. So, you know, we launched, we iterated, and we're able to measure those improvements. The other super nice thing, so there were concrete behaviors that were demonstrated, and this, you could call it better observability as well. So we're able to see that students could do things like use a systems diagram, diagnose issues using SRE tools, annotate an outage, mitigate realistic production issues, and find root causes and propose a solution. So that was an added benefit of the changes that we made to the program as well. Rather than just asking people, did you learn something, we could now see how they were doing things in practice. All right, this is the last slide. So just very quickly, the key takeaways on strapping jetpacks to your unicorns. Training is important. Don't leave it to chance. It's about trying to set everyone up for success right from the start rather than letting people sink or swim. Apply SRE principles to SRE your training and make it more globally reliable and consistent, and monitor, observe, and improve continuously. And just, I really wanted to finish by giving a shout out to the SRE EDU team past and present. We have 7 people on our global team, along with dozens of volunteers, a few of whom are in the audience today, who make this training program possible. So none of what I showed you today would be possible without this cast of characters. And many others who would not fit on the slide. Thank you, and Really appreciate your time.